Good morning. Today's daf in Sota Chaf. We're in Yotzei Tzimtzum Beis. We are starting this morning with a better understanding of Shitas Rabbi Akiva. So in order to get a better understanding of Shitas Rabbi Akiva, let's talk about the Shitas that surround Rabbi Akiva. We are here now. We just started the third parak of Sota. And that first Mishnah, opening up the third parak, talked about Seder. What is the correct order and sequencing regarding the Sota? Okay, so we're in the Beis HaMikdash and we're going through the process and procedure of the Sota. So there is a mincha to be brought, and she's going to be drinking. And if you look at the Torah and you want to see exactly how the order should be done, so you're going to get confused. In other words, the psukim themselves talks about her drinking, and it mentions it three times. And it's not clear which one of those three times is actual instructional, as opposed to what narration and just this is what's going to happen. So and it lends itself to a machlokus. Machlokus tanaim. Yesterday, we've been focusing on primarily two shitas, that of the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, and that of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon's also mentioned the Mishnah as well. In terms of whether or not first she drinks, then the mincha is offered, or alternatively, first the mincha is offered, and then afterwards she drinks. So, and that's a machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon in yesterday's daf on Yates. So we spent most of yesterday, right, the entire first sugya of the Gemara, dedicated to a better understanding of how does the Tanakhama learn the Pesukim, how does Rabbi Shimon learn the Pesukim. And then yesterday we were introduced to a Braisa. In the Braisa we saw the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. Now what do we know? We know that Rabbi Akiva for sure does not view the first reference as a instructional. The first reference of Hishka, Rabbi Akiva says that's not instructional, but rather that teaches us a halacha. What's the halacha? Mashkin Osa Bakarcha. That in the event that she is reluctant and she does not want to drink, so there comes a point in time where we're going to force her to drink. So that's the Shita Rabbi Akiva, and that's what he learns out from the first Hashka'ah mentioned in the Torah, which then means that the second one's instructional, which means that according to Rabbi Akiva, the drinking is done after the Mincha. Okay. This of Rabbi Akiva, with all that stated, it's a quick introduction. We're now just going to go right into the Gemara when you test them at Bays, and we're about two-thirds of the way down. This of Rabbi Akiva Mashkin Osa Bakarcha V'Atanya. So the Gemara says, okay, but I'm going to try to now synthesize the Shita Rabbi Akiva based on the fact that we have another Braisa. Braisa reads as follows: V'Atanya Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kabush Al Barza Matilas Ochpia Shim Nimchaka Megillah V'Amrei Nishosa Ma'aron Osa U'Mashkin Osa Bakarcha. So the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, which is that they had instruments and to talk about sounding unpleasant in the event that she does not want to drink. So what you do is matilin osa, matilin osoch pia. So basically the instrument's put into her mouth, and so that she can't close her mouth. And once the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is erased, once the Megillah goes into the water, so that's it. She's going to drink, and you're going to force her to drink. Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Amar Rabbi Akiva, klomar nitzrichim ela bodka v'halo. The Duke of Almedes. So Rabbi Akiva says, I don't understand. The whole purpose of her drinking is just to be bodiker, to examine her, to see what happened. The water is going to tell us, it's going to be the ultimate litmus test to see whether or not she was with the man while secluded, or she was not with the man. So over here, the Duke of Almedes, her refusal to drink is basically an admission. So we don't need her to drink. So Allah Achalo Krava Kamatz Yechol Lachzaba, and Misha Krava Kamatz Eni Yechol Lachzaba. So rather, Rabbi Akiva says, is that when the kometz is offered, up until the point the kometz is offered, the kometz of the mincha, so she can retract, but mishikarava kometz, once the kometz is offered, so any achalachzaba, and under those circumstances, and only under those circumstances, that we're going to force her to drink. Okay. So, ulatamech, tikshi lachi gufa. So, mishikarava kometz, any achalachzaba, valo beduka valmedes. So the Gemara says, look, I appreciate the fact that you're trying to synthesize the position, Rabbi Akiva. But you don't even have to compare this brisa to the previous brisa. Stay in this brisa in of itself. Did you understand Rabbi Akiva? Because he was confusing. First he said, if she admits it, you know, she doesn't have to drink. And then followed immediately with the words of, oh, you know, once you bring the comets, oh, now she's got to drink. Now we're going to force her to drink. I don't understand. Any form of admission on her part, didn't Rabbi Akiva just say a moment earlier in this braisa that she doesn't have to drink? So the Gemara obviously is bothered, lo kasha. So the Gemara says, well, that's not difficult because ahad de kahadra ba machmas resisa, v'ahad de kahadra ba machmas briusa. So within the Shita Rabbi Akiva, you have to know why she is refusing to drink. In other words, you have to look at her and her contextually. The Kahadra Machas Briyusa. Look at Rashi, five lines from the bottom. Ha diktani beduka v'amidas de kahadra ba machmas briyusa hu she'ina roseses. So, when do I know that her refusal is an admission? When she's basically calm in her refusal. She's steady. And v'ka'am re'ina shosa v'ade temeahi. So, in other words, when she's not nervous, she just basically says, no, I'm not drinking. So that is an admission of guilt. V'lakach ina roseses de samcha mi'ikar v'amra. Ki matina lemishte lo shasina. Veloshna krav komis veloshna lo krav lo shasya. Kitim afarish va'azol. Kol machmas briyusa klal klal lo shasya ve'afilu kirev ha-komis. Meaning, when you know that a refusal is coming via admission, and that knowledge is ascertained by just her calmness. Her calmness would indicate that, look, right, I'm not drinking, meaning, because I know what's going to happen when I drink, and that, of course, it's going to be the end of me. So if she does it in a state of calm, so we know now basically her refusal is tantamount to an admission, and therefore no need for her to drink. She's beduka v'omedis. V'had demaflik ben krav lo krav de kahadra ba machmas resusa. Now it's true, says Rashi. I'm continuing Rashi. Now it's true that Rabbi Kiva and the Braisa says, well, it makes a difference whether the kometz was offered, kometz was not offered. That's talking about where she's shaking, and Rashi writes. Sha'anaroin osa rosesis. Deiklamem adena me'amenesh lo yivdeku amayim va'afilo hi tahora. V'rotza aisa lismocha tarasav lishtos. In other words, she's nervous, understandably. Meaning right now, her refusal to drink is not an admission of guilt. She's just, understandably, extraordinarily nervous. Because she knows that the water is going to do unbelievable damage. And although she's confident that she didn't do anything in that room, yet she's going to drink water, which potentially, not for her, but can be unbelievably, in other words, it's deadly. Ulaficha chi rosesas. And as a result of that, she's shaking. Ukshem hages lishtos choserzba. And now we get to this point of drinking, and it's an overpowering moment, and she's shaking. So that's not an admission of her guilt. It's just, understandably, she's tremendously nervous. Okay, so, and I know this is not the greatest bedside manners, but, okay, nothing to be nervous about, you're going to be drinking. Okay, if that doesn't help, now you get out the instruments, and you're forced to drink. Okay, and then the rest of the Rashi, the Gemara is going to clear up in just a moment. So, comes out now that according to Rabbi Akiva, if her refusal is understood as an admission of her guilt, she's not going to drink. We're not going to force her to drink. But it's true that Rabbi Akiva earlier talked about her forcing to drink, but that's only because her refusal was not an admission of guilt. Her refusal is just simply nerves. How do we know? So the Gemara says it depends on whether she has a calm demeanor or she is shaking. Okay. Which, admittedly, in other words, that's a little bit difficult to gauge, but that's the Gemara's distinction within Rabbi Akiva. The Hachi Kamar, we go back to the Gemara. The Hachi Kamar, four lines from the bottom. Kol machmas b'yusa klav klav lo shasya. So if she's calm, she's not going to be drinking, period. And machmas resisa, so ashlo krav rakamatza katalo imchak megillah adalo imchak megillah. V'i nami imchak megillah d'shlo kedin avikawanim demachke amatzi hadrabe. And if it's resisa, if she's now shaking, so now we can make a chiluk. And that is before Mechikas Megillah. So alternatively, after Mechikas Megillah, but the Kometz wasn't offered, Matzi Hadrabe. Mishikarva Kometz, but once the Kometz is offered, the Bedin Avid Kohanim Demachke, in other words, and the Kohanim did what they were supposed to do, La Matzi Hadrabe. At that point in time, there is no going back, and she's going to be drinking. Okay, Adka, now that kind of helped us. No, not kind of. It helped us understand the Shita of Rabbi Akiva within the Braisa. So, Bakashi to Rabbi Akiva, Ad Rabbi Akiva. Okay, good. So now that we understood Rabbi Akiva internally in the Braisa, but now we're going to go back and we're going to compare. We're going to know the difference between Rabbi Akiva this Braisa and Rabbi Akiva of the previous Braisa. Hasamamar, Mechika Makva, Vahachamar, Kometz Makiv. So which is a Makiv? Is it going to be the Mechika or is it going to be the Kometz? Meaning, at what point in time are we at the point of no return? So is it after the erasure or is it after the krav hakamitza? And trey tanai v'alibet the Rabbi Kippur. So the Gemara says, great question. And I'll tell you what, we don't know. Meaning there are multiple versions of Rabbi Akiva. There was a, whatever. In other words, the Talmidim give us the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. And one of the Talmidim, either one of the Talmidim got it wrong. Right? Alternatively, right, well, you could certainly suggest is that Rabbi Akiva himself, maybe he changed his position. One Talmud heard one conclusion of Rabbi Akiva and the other Talmud heard another. However, we got to this point. Okay, two versions of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so now we have spent time within the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. We now know that according to Rabbi Akiva, there comes a point of no return. However, that's not the end of the story for Rabbi Akiva. Meaning the point of no return is two versions. Either it's going to be Mechikas Hashem, or it's going to be the offering of the Chametz. But there is a point of no return. However, even if you're past the point of no return, if she is calm in her refusal, she simply says, I'm not drinking. She's not nervous. She's just being headstrong. Under those circumstances, so Rabbi Akiva says she is now, we don't have to go through the process. In other words, she's refusing to drink because she knows. She now knows that if she drinks, she's going to die. So under those circumstances, no need to force her. She's Beduka Valmedes. On the other hand, if she's shaking, so then we force her to drink. Okay. That we know according to Rabbi Akiva. Within this sheet of Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says, I have a follow-up question. So let's say she starts off by saying, I'm not drinking. And again, name is erased. Let's assume that that's the point of no return. Name is erased. And she says, I'm not drinking. And she says it calmly. Okay. Now, again, what do we think we know? So we think what we know is that according to Rabbi Akiva, that is an admission of guilt. Now, the Chazavam or Shosani. And now afterwards, she says, Shosani. Now, you know what? Bring it on. I'd like to drink it. So Mahu. So Kevin Damrei Nishosa Tamei Ani Kamra VeKevin Dechzik Nafsha B'Tumah Lo Matzi Adraba. So, do we understand that when she says when she refuses to drink, and again in a calm tone, so maybe that's just simply an admission. Once we have an admission, that's it. In other words, we can shut down the whole operation, and we don't have to go any further. And even though afterwards she says no, let me drink. At that point in time, there's no need for that because basically we got the admission out of her. Odilma, Kevin Damra Shosani, Galia Daita, Damach must be Yisusa Huda Amra. Alternatively, maybe not. Maybe after she calmly says, I'm not drinking, maybe by virtue of the fact that shortly thereafter she says, no, I'm going to drink, maybe what it was is that she did a great job masking her nerves. It could be that she was an unbelievably nervous woman, but at the same time, she knew how to mask it well. And by virtue of the fact now that she is articulating and verbalizing that she's ready to drink, maybe that is an indication that previously she really was shaking. She just wasn't physically shaking. So Teiku, the Gemara says, okay, it's a fair question, and we're going to leave it unresolved then. And as I pointed out, according to Rabbi Akiva, where basically an admission on her part will shut down the whole operation, and now we're looking at body language in order to see whether or not she is she's admitting to her guilt or not admitting to her guilt. So then these kinds of questions obviously open up, meaning I'm looking at her body language, but I don't know if we're reading the body language correctly. Okay. That's why for Rabbi Akiva, it becomes very difficult. In fact, so challenging. Teiku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Okay. And one really short halacha here in the Gemara as we are about to start the next Mishnah. But before we start the next Mishnah, Amar Avu D'Shmuel, Tzarech Shiten Malasoch HaMayim. My time of Damakra, Me Hamarim, Shamarim Kvar. You have to put something bitter in the water. The Torah, in describing the water, calls it Me Hamarim. It's bitter water. Okay. Short 2 weeks ago, we said we just went through Pesach, and we had Marur, and we have to eat something bitter. Struggling, we struggled to find something better to eat. Okay, right. The rabbi spoke about it. Shabbos Agadol, right? Ashkenazim took on the minhag of eating horseradish. You ever hear such a minhag? I know. Sorry for the listener at home. I'm speaking now to a Sephardi, who scratching his head, wondering how it is that the Ashkenazim found horseradish as their bitter herb. Okay. Anyway,
what do you think the bitter herb was here?
That's a great question. My best answer is I don't know. That's not my best answer, but it's honesty. No point in guessing. I don't know. So the forced me to guess. It just simply means, you know, I'm better. I'm happier saying I don't know. So this halacha now, it's so interesting because where did this come from? Meaning, Avuah d'Shmuel is the first one reporting now a new ingredient into the water. As far as the Torah is concerned, the Torah says water and dirt, and
the ink should be bitter.
So water and dirt and the Megillah, where now the ink is gonna leak into the water. Okay, so those are your ingredients. That's as far as the Torah is concerned. As far as the Mishnayos are concerned, same story. And now, Avuah d'Shmuel, an Amara granted, by the way, early Amara, first generation Amara, so introduces us to the first time that, you know what, you're going to throw in a bitter ingredient. Okay, so where's this coming from via Masorah? I mean, obviously he had a Masorah, in other words, right? And he's darshaning the Pasuk as well. I told you this before, right? I don't know how many times it's hard to search this information, but you don't often get a drasha by an Amora on a Pasuk, right? All the drashas are coming to us already via the Tanaim. The Tanaim teach us all the drashas. And when do you see an Amora giving us a drasha? It's not often. Okay. I don't exactly know where to put it numerically. I certainly don't know numerically. And in other words, I don't even know the right word. Is it rare? Is it really rare? But anyway, it's not often. And so fine. And just one more point on this Avuah d'Shmuel, that you're throwing something bitter into the water. And if you look at Rashi and Chumash doesn't say this. In fact, you read Rashi and Chumash, I don't have the Rashi in front of me right now. He says, Maim Hamarim, it's going to be bitter for her. In other words, if she's in fact guilty, it's going to be unbelievably bitter. Rashi over here understands it not as an additive ingredient, but just simply a description of what's this going to represent for the woman if in fact she was mitami. Okay, anyway. Okay, Adkam, we're going to move on now to the next Mishnah. If, let's say, before the erasure, she says, I'm not drinking. So Megillah, again, that's understood as an admission of guilt. So now what do we do? So we shut down operations. But now, I've used that word already a number of times this morning, but let's be a little bit clearer. The Mishnah here tells us, what does that mean, shut down operations? So Megillah's on Ignezes. So we have a Megillah. We can't recycle it, right? As we're going to learn later in today's daf, you can't reuse it for another woman. So now, this was written for her. This can only be used by her. We don't need it anymore. She admitted, she copped. So now, what do we do? Okay, so we put in Geniza. So the Megillah Nignezes, Rashi writes over here that it's placed right by the Heichal. O Minchasa Mispazeres. Now, as far as the Mincha is concerned, also now we have a problem. We have a mincha that is unofferable. So what do? Disposal. So we put it with, so mispazeres literally means it's spread out, but Rashi over here says that's not what it means. Rashi cites other Gemara to prove his point, but Rashi describes it as that we're going to burn it. In other words, but burning it not on the mizbeach, meaning burn it as disposal. Al hadeshen, by the base hadeshen, in the azara. And Rashi points out it has to be in the deshen of the azara. Rashi says that there are three deshens. And the one we're describing over here is the Azara. It's basically a disposal fire where the mincha now is disqualified and I can't use it and you have to burn in the Azara. Why do you have to burn in the Azara? Because that's where it would have been eaten had it been a kosher mincha. So the place where I would have eaten is the place where I need to dispose it. So therefore the Azara. And the Mishnah tells us very clearly cannot be recycled. That Megillah cannot be reused. Nimchakas a Megillah v'amra t'me'ani. Let's say the Megillah was erased, and afterwards she says, okay, Temea Ani. In other words, and here this is no room for interpretation over here. She just simply says it. I was with the man. So again, now at that point in time, there's no need for her to drink. Again, the whole purpose of her drinking is to clarify what happened. Once she has an admission, so we know what happened. So the mincha is going to, again, the water is going to be, the water will be spilled out and the mincha is going to be disposed of. Nimchaka ha-megillah v'amra eni shosa. Now, if let's say after the erasure of the Megillah, we put the Megillah into the water, Shem HaShem now has been erased and she says, eni shosa, I'm not drinking. Now, I know earlier this morning, so what we did is we spent time with the Shita Rebbe Akiva. And according to Rabbi Kiva, it matters whether she's saying it while shaking or she's saying it calmly. In other words, for Rabbi Akiva, there was a body language that needs to be deciphered. But that was Rabbi Akiva. Now we're learning a Mishnah. And I don't know if this Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva or not. The Mishnah over here says that if she says, So here, this Mishnah tells us that after the erasure, and she doesn't admit, she just simply says, I refuse to drink. So then at that point in time, we're going to force her to drink.
Did the Gemara go through with the waste of the Sota scroll? It's just unusual for the Beis Midrash to have liquid waste. We don't really...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know where it's going to get poured, meaning... Right, correct. I don't know.
Is there an opt-out for her to not admit, but not deny, and just get the ketubah and get divorced?
No. In other words, she'll just admit it, meaning... Okay, fine. That's it. She'll lose her ketubah.
But she gets divorced and she doesn't have to drink.
In other words, that'll come with an admission.
That's only if she admits.
Yeah. So, Eino masbekas lishbot ashapanem orikos ve'eneha boltos ve'hi mitmalen gidin ve'hin omrim hotziah shelo titame azara. Now, what happens when she drinks? So here the Mishnah describes in dramatic terms that, right, she's not even going to finish her drink. And her face is going to turn a complexion, and her eyes are going to bulge, and she's going to be filled with gidin. In other words, everything's going to basically expand. She's going to start bloating. And they say, in other words, the they over here is most probably a reference to the Kohanim. Hotziya shalot tami azara. In other words, let's get her out of here right away because we don't want the azara to become tame. That's going to be clarified in just a moment. Not in just a moment. But a little bit later on this morning, we'll clarify that point. Now, im yesh la zechus. So here we are now in the Mishnah, Daf Chaf and Sota, and now we're going to be talking about zechuyos. In other words, if she has zechuyos, so haisa tolala. So what's going to happen then is it's going to suspend judgment. In other words, it will delay the effects of the drinking. Yesh chus tolala shanachas, v'yesh chus tolala shtei shanim, v'yesh chus tolala shalosh shanim. And that delay can go 1, 2, or even 3 years. Now, we already know together that this is a point of controversy amongst the Tanaim in terms of whether or not there is a delay of the effect, meaning she's guilty. She slept with the man and the water is going to end her. Now, is it instantaneously or is there going to be confounding variables that will lead to a delayed effect? And we already know together, I'm reminding us because it's going to be useful information later in today's daf. And Rabbi Shimon says that there's no such thing. There's no confounding variable. Rabbi Shimon opposes what we just saw together in the Mishnah. However, obviously, the author of our Mishnah, whichever Tana they may be, obviously subscribes to the idea that, no, there are confounding variables that will delay the effect of the water. Mikanamar Benazai, and as a result of this, Benazai said, Chayav Adam Lam is Bito Torah. So it's a person's obligated to teach his daughter Torah, right? There is no requirement. There is no obligation for a woman to learn Torah. Right, the learning of Torah is a requirement for men, not for women. And Ben Azai says, okay, but I could see a benefit in terms of teaching your daughter Torah. Okay, and obviously over here we are not having a quote unquote modern discussion in terms of whether or not women should or should not learn Torah. In other words, right? No need right now to get confused over the modern issue. The modern issue is an important issue, but that's not what we're describing right now. What we're describing right now is first and foremost the basic halacha, which is the requirement to learn Torah is for men, not for women. Right? The Gemara Darshans in Kiddushim, Benechem v'Labanoseichem. So the requirement is for the men, not for the women. However, Benazai says, despite the fact that they're not required, but I could see a benefit. In fact, Benazai says, I see the benefit so strongly, so he's going to use the word chayev. Chayev is a really strong word, meaning they're not chayev. But Benazai says, but over here now, at least this would, the benefit would be so strong. You know what? It's a good idea. More than a good idea. Shem tishta teida shezchus tolalam. So that if in fact she drinks and look, by the way, in other words, as far as her context has gone over her lifetime, so needless to say, she made a couple of really bad mistakes. Okay. In other words, she's married. She was with another man and she was warned not to be with that man and she secluded herself with that man. And okay. In other words, whatever Torah she learned, Okay, obviously she didn't internalize all that well. But at least now she has the chuyos. Right? She has chus tolala. And so now what's going to happen is that she won't experience the immediate death. In other words, it'll get delayed. Maybe up to 3 years. Okay. Much more to discuss on this topic of Ben Azai and his fringe benefit for teaching your daughter's Torah.
So wait, this 3 year reprieve that she gets.
Yeah. Right?
That means that she actually gets to go back to her husband and have children.
Okay. We're gonna all perfect questions, and we're gonna address it, and not even in today's daf. We're gonna come back.
Come back.
Rabbi Eliezer Amar Kol Malay Medbito Torah Lomda Tiflos. Okay, question of what the correct nusach here in the Mishnah is. Do we have the word ki'ilu? Do we not have the word ki'ilu? In the Mishnah, you're going to see the word ki'ilu, but regardless. The point of Rabbi Lazar is that if you're teaching your daughter Torah, your lom de tiflis, what you're going to be doing is tantamount to teaching her tiflis. Okay, more than a fair question to ask. What's tiflis? Right? The Gemara is going to discuss it, so stay tuned. We're going to come back. We're going to discuss it in the Gemara. It's fair to say right now that what Rabbi Eliezer is expressing is not a good thing. But what exactly does that mean? So come back. We're gonna discuss it more. Rabbi Yoshua Omer wrote that Isha Bikav Vitiflos Mitisha Kabin Uprishus. So Rabbi Yeshua says, as far as what women want, so they'd be happier with Kav. Kav is the amount of food that's given to them. Kav is a measurement. Kav is not a lot. In other words, she'll be happier with less food, but Tiflos. Tiflos in this context clearly means to be with her husband more. In other words, if her husband is not making all that much money and she's not living a life of luxury, but if she gets to be with her husband more often, so that's preferable to a woman. By the way, the Mishnah itself is already cluing us in, keying us in terms of how to understand the word tiflos. And mitisha kabin apricious, on the other hand, tisha kabin, obviously, all right, 9 times greater the amount of food that was given to her than, you know, by the poor husband. So the wealthy husband obviously can luxuriate her in delicacies and food, and really give her the luxuries of the world. But a woman would prefer one kav and just more time with her husband, physical time with her husband, rather than 9 kavin and precious and separation from her husband. Okay, again, how to understand that better? We're coming back. Huaya Omer. So he would also say, and presumably this is a continuation of Rabbi Yoshua. Huaya Omer Chasid Shota, Rasha Arum, Isha Prusha, and Makos Prushim, Hare Elam Mikale Mibale Haol Mibale Olam. These 4 kinds of people are people that are destroying the world. Okay. What I'm gonna do now is I'm not gonna translate. Why not? Why not? I'm gonna take a hard pass. But I'm really not. I'm going to kick the can forward because what we're going to do is that the Gemara is going to attack every one of these expressions, 4 different expressions of Rabbi Yoshua. Obviously, he's very critical of these 4 types of people. Who are these 4 types of people? So let's stay tuned. In other words, come back again tomorrow. We are going to come back and we're going to discuss it. Obviously, so much of the Mishnah needs clarification, and we're going to do exactly that. So let us follow the Gemara's path in terms of explaining the Mishnah. Number one, Am Rav Yehuda Mishmol Mishum Rabbi Meir. Okay, so the Gemara tells us the following: in the name of Rabbi Meir, Kesheisi Lamad Torah Eitzel Rabbi Akiva. So you know, Rabbi Meir says, "I learned Torah by Rabbi Akiva." Okay, Rabbi Akiva had a life, to say the very least. But we all know that he had thousands of students, and they all died. And then he restarted again. He hit the reset button, and he took in 5 new students, and one of the 5 new students that he took in was Rabbi Meir. And when I was learning Torah by Rabbi Akiva, Hayisi Matil Kankantom L'Sochadio. So I was a scribe, I was a sofer, and what I do is I took Kankantom. Okay? Forgive me, I don't know what kind of mineral it is, but it doesn't matter. In other words, it was an added ingredient that he added to the ink when he was writing his sofros, and what did it do? It left it permanent. In other words, it dried almost instantly, and it was permanently there. Velo amrli davar. Now Rabbi Akiva was fine with it. A tacit agreement that this is correct. What I'm doing is good. Kishabati ate to Rabbi Shmuel. And then when I went to Rabbi Shmuel, amrli bini ma malachtecha amarti lo lavlarani. In his introduction to Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel says, "Nu, what do you do?" He says, "I'm a sofer." Good. Amrli bini avizayir shemalachtecha malacha shemaim hi. So Rabbi Shmuel gives them a serious warning. And that is that what you're involved in is Melecha Shamayim, right? Holy work. Shematachsi Osacha, Sotati Osacha, is what you can do is either leave out a letter, add a letter, and Nimseis Atamachrivs Kolam Kulo, and you're destroying the whole world. Rashi gives examples, two examples by Rashi. The Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, in other words, we're assuming that the Sofer is not just writing Chumash, he's also writing Nevim as well. And he gets to the 10th parak of Yirmiyahu, says Rashi. And he writes, Vahashem Elokim Emes. Now, we're kind of familiar with that pasuk because what we do is that at the end of Shema, every morning and every evening, so we add the word Emes afterwards. In other words, Emes really is the beginning of the bracha after Shema, right? Hashem Elokeichem Emes. And basically what we're doing is that we are kind of borrowing, if you will, the same phrase as this pasuk in Yirmiyahu. But if, let's say, the Sofer, for example, in writing this pasuk in Yirmiyahu, let's say he leaves out a letter, and not just any letter, but the Aleph of Emes. So then you are writing a totally different pasuk. And obviously, Machriv Asa Olam, destroying the world. Okay. Alternatively, Breishis Bara Elokim, and instead of writing Breishis Bara Elokim, the first pasuk in the Torah, you add a Vav, Breishis Bara Elokim. Right, the was created, right? Baro Elokim, Bracious created a Elokim, right? It's a, right, again, a not just an added letter, but gives a absolutely opposite. In other words, you are undercutting the entire basis of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, of Yadus. Okay. So you are Machriv is called Olam, you're destroying the world. So now, in his introduction to Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Meir says, okay, so let me tell you what I do, and that is that you have nothing to worry about. When I write with my ink, I make sure it's permanent ink. I add a chemical ingredient to it, so that it makes it permanent. So And Rabbi Shmuel says to Rabbi Meir, what are you doing? You're not allowed to make it a permanent ink. In other words, we want ink that is erasable. How do I know that? The Parsha of Sota. Parsha of Sota says that when I take the Parsha and put it in the water, it's going to erase. I don't want the Torah. No, I don't want. The Torah doesn't want permanent ink. The Torah wants erasable ink. Okay. So, first and foremost, how exactly did that conversation go between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Meir? Right. In other words, it was obviously didn't start off great. That their first meeting. In other words, that first meeting turned confrontational really quickly. But even within the confrontation, like we're trying to figure out, like what did Rabbi Shmuel say? What did Rabbi Meir respond? What did Rabbi Shmuel respond in return? My kamerle and my kahadale. So the Gemara says, okay. So I want a better understanding of that back and forth. Hachi kamar le, the Gemara says, okay, here's how it goes. Lo mi bai b'chaseh v'yisera seka debakiyani. So Rabbi Meir says to Rabbi Shmuel, what's your concern? That I leave out a letter, I add a letter, bakiyani. Rabbi Meir was absolute expert, right? If I remember correctly, I hope I do, the Gemara tells us that what Rabbi Meir did is that he was stranded, he needed a Megillah, and he wrote the entire Megillah by heart. Now the Gemara was critical, because you're not allowed to do that, but Rabbi Meir was in a position where he had no choice. Anyway, he was a baki. So Ella, and what he's saying first and foremost to Rabbi Shmuel is, do not worry, not missing a letter, not adding a letter, right? I have a Mesorah. I know exactly how many letters go, and I know where they go. Ella afilu lamechus lezvuv de damasi v'yasev ha'tagid de dalas v'machik lei, umashri lei reish, davar achi yesh li shani matal esoch ediyo v'kankantam Shmuel. And Rabbi Meir says to Rabbi Shmuel, so first of all, I assuage your first concern. And that I'm going to be missing a letter or adding a letter. I'm not going to do that. And number two, even if I write everything perfectly, which I'm claiming I do, even if I write everything perfectly, here's what can happen. And that is that I'm writing a letter, and then a zvuv, a fly, is going to be falling on the dalet. And on the back end of the dalet, removing that all-important leg that juts out. And now the dalet is going to be turned to resh, because then the fly is going to come off with the ink, and now the dalet became a resh. So Rabbi Meir says to Rabbi Shmuel, you don't even have to worry about that. Why? Because I use permanent ink. Ah, So that's also not a concern as well. So good. So now we just have a better understanding of the back and forth between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Meir. And oh, by the way, Rabbi Shmuel says to Rabbi Meir, I'm not happy with that because you're not allowed to use permanent ink. Okay, good. But in other words, now we got more clarification in terms of how that back and forth went between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shmuel. Ini, v'atanya. Okay, now, what do we have over here? We have one version of Rabbi Meir first learning by Rabbi Akiva, then introducing himself to Rabbi Shmuel, and that introduction didn't go so smoothly. But anyway, v'atanya, the Gemara says, okay, but I have another braisa. Here in the braisa, I'm Rabbi Meir, k'sheisi lama Torah, etzel Rabbi Shmuel. Hayisi mato kan kantel mosar chadil v'lam erli davar. Okay, so here in the second braisa, it almost sounds identical, but already hopefully you picked up on it. And that is that his first Rebbe was Rebbe Shmuel. And he was adding the chemical into his ink, making it permanent. Rebbe Shmuel was fine with it. And I went to Rebbe Kiva, and Rebbe Kiva says, don't make your ink permanent ink. You're not allowed to do that. And obviously now, and here in the second braisa, We don't have a back and forth between him and Rabbi Akiva. But regardless, however, the stira is pretty clear. Kasha, shimush, shimush, and kasha, asra, asra. Who told him he can't use permanent ink? And Bryson number one, it was Rabbi Shmuel. And Bryson number two was Rabbi Meir. Who was his first Rabbi? Again, conflicting Brysos. So the Gemara says, Bishlam, shimush, shimush, lo kasha, mikara, asra, lakamid, Rabbi Akiva, kevin, delamatsi, kamalibe, asra, lakamid, Rabbi Shmuel, vagamar, gamara. So, as far as who his first Rebbe was concerned, the Gemara says, for that, Gemara says, I know the dynamics. I know what happened. Rabbi Meir first sat in Rabbi Akiva's shir and he had no idea what was going on. Mm-hmm. Now, Rabbi Meir should feel okay because he's not the first one who sat in Rabbi Akiva's shir and did not know what was flying. So, we have another Gemara in Menachos that tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting in the shir and also did not know what was going on. Okay, so Rabbi Akiva gave a high-level shir, to say the very least. And so what he first did, then decided is that, look, this shir is too high for me. And I literally don't have the basics. I don't have the meat and potatoes to go into the shir. And so then what he did is he went to Rabbi Shmuel, and he learned the basics. I say the basics, by the way. In other words, the basics are Mishnayos and Braisos and correct understanding of the Mishnayos and the Braisos. And basically, he now learned how to talk, meaning in Torah. Then he went back to Rabbi Akiva Shir, and then he understood. So the Gemara says, good. So in other words, it just is a question of at what point are you introducing yourself to Rabbi Meir's life? Meaning he did at one point in his life go from Rabbi Akiva to Rabbi Shmuel. He also went from Rabbi Shmuel to Rabbi Akiva. That's fine. Good. So the Gemara says that I understand. So, but the Gemara says, but that second question, who was the one who told them no to permanent ink? So the Gemara says, "Yeah, I don't have a great answer to that question." So how does so Ella Asra Asra Kasha? So Kasha. So the Gemara says, "Yeah, you're right. Which of the Tanaim told him you can't use permanent ink?" We have two different versions, and the Gemara says, "And it's just that's unresolvable." Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer Omer Haya Rabbi Meir La Kol Matil and Kankanto Musochadil. Now, within this position, Rabbi Meir, we already know that Rabbi Meir says permanent ink is okay. We also know that one of his Rebbeim told him, don't do it. But Rabbi Meir says permanent ink is okay. And he would use permanent ink all the time. Now, in one version of Rabbi Meir, and I know a lot of information today, this is Rabbi Yehuda, in the sheet of Rabbi Meir says, into everything, lakol. Meaning, anytime he would write Sefer, Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzah, he would use permanent ink. Chutz, we're on the top of the Amud Beis. Chutz mi parsha sota bavad. With notable exception to Parshat Sota, meaning when he got to the part in the Sefer Torah of Parshat Sota, he would change inks. He would not use permanent ink, but he would use ink that could be erased. And Rabbi Yaakov Amar Mishmal Chutz Mi Parshat Sota Shel Mikdash. And now, in version number two of Rabbi Meir, this is Rabbi Yaakov saying in the name of Rabbi Meir. No, when writing a Sefer Torah, he would always use permanent ink. Even when he got to Parshat Sota, he would use permanent ink. When would he use erasable ink? Only when writing a Parsha Sota in the Beis HaMikdash for an actual Sota. So my Beinayu, I'm Rabbi Yirmiya, Limchok Laminatorika Beinayu. And what is at the root of this Machlokus of Rabbi Meir? These two versions of Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Yehuda version and the Rabbi Yaakov version. According to Rabbi Yehuda, so I can take the actual Sefer Torah, and I know this is going to sound funny, cut out the parsha of Sota and use that for the Sota. Okay. It's a little bit weird. But in other words, but you could. And according to Rabbi Yaakov's version of Reb Meir, you can't do that. In other words, the parsha for Sota has to be tailor-made for her. You can't take the parsha from the Sefer Torah and use it for the Sota.
Don't we learn this when we get?
No. What? No.
When we said before that had to be written at the time of the Sota.
Yeah. Right? The Lishma requirement. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to touch on your very question. So Vehani Tanai Ki Hani Tanai, and the Gemara says, and let's do the following. Meaning, now that we know this really interesting machlokas between Rebbe Meir, but versions within Rebbe Meir. Version number one, version number two, as to whether or not I could take the parsha from the Torah and use it for the Sota, the Gemara says, you know what? It parallels another machlokas. I think it does. Ditanya, the Gemara says, look, let's consider. Ein Megillas Akshir Lashkos Basota Acheres. Rabbi Achai Bar Yoshiyahu Amar Megillas Akshir Lashkos Basota Acheres. Recycling of a Megillah. It's Machlokas Tanayim. Tanakama says a Sota Megillah cannot be recycled for another Sota. And Rabbi Achai says, sure he can. Sure he can recycle. And the Gemara is now assuming that the recycler, meaning Rabbi Achai, is in agreement with our first version of Rabbi Meir. Meaning, if I can write a Sefer Torah and then, hey, you know what? We have a Sota. I have a Sefer Torah. Let's cut it out. Let's use it for her. Meaning those two positions parallel each other, right? And the Gemara says, no, those positions are not paralleling each other. Amar Papa Dumalohi. Adkan lo kamar tanakama hausamela kemendi intik lishim racha lo hadra mintke lishim leah. No. The second brisa we just cited, the Tanakama who says you can't recycle a Megillah Sota, it's very simple. You know why you can't recycle it? Because you wrote it for Rachel, and that's it. You can only use it for Rachel. Meaning, once you're writing it lishma for a particular woman, you can't use it for another woman. Aval Torah stamaksiva hachinam demachinan. However, if I'm writing the Parsha Sota in the Sefer Torah, I didn't write it for any woman, and so therefore it's unassigned. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you can assign it later on. So it could very well be that the Tanakama of the second Brisa is agreeing that even though I can't recycle a Parsha Sota that was designed for one woman to use for another woman, but I don't know, from a Sefer Torah, maybe I can, because the Sefer Torah was never designed for any particular woman. And I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Demalohi, and Rav Nachman Yitzchak also agrees, don't try to synthesize these two Brisas, they are not parallel. He's just attacking it from a different end. Adkan lo kamar Rabbi Achaba Yoshiyah Hasam Ella Megillah Deichka Vashem Alos Ba'olam Aval Torah Din Lisamik Siva Hachidami Dol Machinan. And I could say the following: even the position that says it allows you to recycle, right? That's Rav Achai Bar Yoshiyah. Even the recycler, he will tell you that yeah, you can recycle Megillah Sota. You know why? Because it was written as a Megillah Sota. But maybe he would agree. I can't take a parsha of the Torah and use it for a Sota. The purpose of writing the Megillah Sota in a Torah is not for a Sota, but lihislamed, meaning that's our instruction manual. That's the Torah. And once it serves as a purpose of lihislamed, I can't then turn around and use it as an actual parsha of Sota. Okay. So basically, as much as the Gemara wants to parallel these two machloksim, the Gemara simply says no. They're not running parallel. And now, David already asked, the Gemara now is going to ask, Rabbi Acha Bar Yoshiyah, Leisle Kasav Legarish Esisha Venim Lachamatza Ben Ira V'Amar Lo, Shmikish Shimcha, V'Shemishti Kishemishticha. So Apostle Legarish Bo. So the Gemara and Megillah, which we're going to see together in the not-so-distant future, Mirza Hashem, the Gemara there says, let's say, right, man goes through the trouble of writing a get for his wife and then says, you know what? Let's work on this marriage. Okay, so now, fine. So his neighbor says, you know, it's so funny. All right, I've been thinking. I don't mean to make light of this, but right, I've been thinking for the longest time of divorcing my wife. But you know what? I never got around to it. But happens to be that my name, your name are the same. Our wives' names are the same. Let me take your get and let me use it for me. You can't do it. Why not? Lishma. It's because the get has to be written for this particular woman. And it cannot be used for any other woman, even if you share the same names, even if your husband share the same names. You can't use it for anyone else. And so the Gemara says, I don't understand. We know there's a Lashma requirement for by get, which absolutely will prohibit you for using it for anyone else. And now Rav Acha Bar Yoshia is okay with recycling a Parsha Sota, where there's also a Lashma requirement. We learned it already in the Masechta that there's a Lashma requirement by Sota. How can you talk about recycling a Parsha Sota? Amre, so the Gemara says, yeah, but here's what they say in the yeshiva, meaning they thought of this question as well, and their response is, Hasam v'kasav la'am rechmana be'inan k'siv l'shma ha'chav asala. So ma'asiyah mechika, you're right, there's a l'shma. But you have to see what exactly is the l'shma requirement. By get, v'kasav la. The k'siva has to be l'shma. When it comes to the Parsha Sota, v'asala. Now, it's hard to translate that into English. The doing of it. What do you mean, the doing of it? Which action point are we talking about? Rav Acha Bar Yoshia will tell you, the erasure. The erasure has to be done l'shma. But in terms of the writing, it does not have to be done l'shma. And that's why, if one sota, for whatever reason, didn't need it, according to Rav Acha Bar Yoshia, you can go ahead and you can reuse it for somebody else. Okay. Note, by the way, of course, our Mishnah doesn't agree with Rav Acha Bar Yoshia. Our Mishnah says that you can't recycle it. But at least in the defense of Rav Acha Bar Yoshia, yes, there's a Lashma requirement, but not on the Ksiva, only on the Mechika. Okay, let's do one more section for today. Einam Afsekas L'shos Achapaneha. So Amani Rabbi Shimon Idam Ramakavis Min Chasa V'achar Kach Mashke D'kama D'lo Kavra Min Chasa Lo Baske Le Maya D'chsiv Min Chazikaron Maskeris Avon. Okay, so as far as the Mishnah is concerned and who the author of the Mishnah is, so the Mishnah is following the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, as we learned in yesterday's daf, was of the position of first offer the mincha and afterwards she drinks. So, in other words, what we're expecting is that the effects will take place immediately upon drinking. On the other hand, I'm a seifa. But I'm going to go one step further in the Mishnah. And it says, Yesh l'zuchus, ha'isa tolala. So, asa l'rabbana, di Rabbi Shimon, ein z'chus tola b'mayim amarim. On the other hand, then the Mishnah, the very next point of the Mishnah is, you know, sometimes there are confounding variables that will delay the effects of the water. That's not Rabbi Shimon. In fact, we're going to learn 2 days from now in Chav Beis that Rabbi Shimon simply rejects this idea. Rabbi Shimon says that if she's guilty, the effects will occur immediately and there simply are no confounding variables. Okay, so who is the author of our Mishnah? Well, that part's confusing. Meaning, on one hand, it sounded like it's following Rabbi Shimon, but the very next step of the Mishnah says it's not following Rabbi Shimon. Amar Rav Chista, Hamani, Rabbi Akiva, he da Amar, Makrifis min chasav achar kach mashke. So the Gemara says it's Rabbi Akiva. Right? Going back to the beginning of today's daf, where we wrapped up yesterday's sugya. So we know that Rabbi Akiva, on one hand, agrees with Rabbi Shimon, that first mincha is offered, and then afterwards she drinks. And remember, we just did the beginning of today's daf. According to Rabbi Akiva, what do I do with that first hishka? That's telling me a different halacha, which is that sometimes we're going to force her to drink. Okay. And we spent a lot of time at the beginning of today's shiur going over when is that going to be true. And then, uvizchus avar karabanan. But as far as zechuyos, in terms of confounding variables that will delay the effect, Rabbi Akiva does not agree with Rabbi Shimon. Now, mind you, by the way, Rabbi Akiva was the Rebbe of Rabbi Shimon, but still. In other words, they disagreed on this very issue. And according to Rabbi Akiva, he agrees with, there could be a taliyah. There could be a delay in the effect. Okay, fine. So that would, so in terms of who's the author of our Mishnah, it's not Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara says, you're right, it's not Rabbi Shimon. But it would be Rabbi Akiva, who on one point agrees with Rabbi Shimon, on another point disagrees with Rabbi Shimon. Mm-hmm. And this will be our stopping point for today. Okay. Let us quickly recap our daf today. Number one, what we did is we wrapped our head around the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, like Rabbi Shimon says, is that first the mincha is offered and then afterwards she drinks. Okay? And yesterday we spent a good amount of yesterday's daf navigating through the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. We know Rabbi Akiva is on board with that sheet, but what we did at the beginning of today's shiur is that we further clarified the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Because sometimes, according to Rabbi Akiva, if there is an admission on her part, so then we just call the whole thing off and we don't force her to drink. Even though Rabbi Akiva says sometimes we force her to drink. And that forced the Gemara to basically come to some sort of balance. Sometimes we force, sometimes we don't force. And when is that? So that's what we did in the beginning of today's daf, clarifying the shita of Rabbi Kiva. And basically, we become the body language doctor. We now are going to be interpreting her body language either as an admission of guilt or just simple nerves. Okay. And admittedly, that's challenging, and the Gemara itself noted that that's obviously challenging. Then, we started the Mishnah on Chaf Amud Aleph, and once you have Mechikas and Megillah, once it's erased, so now what happens in the, what happens as far as an admission on her part, if she actually articulates Tamei Ani, so then we throw everything, then we throw everything out. But when I say throw everything out, I'm talking about proper disposal, Geniza. Geniza of the water, Geniza of the Megillah, and the Mincha is also going to be properly disposed of as well. If, on the other hand, after Mechikas and Megillah, she just simply is going to be obstinate, and she says, I'm not drinking, we force her to drink. Good. The Mishnah introduces us to the idea of Taliyah. Taliyah, that sometimes it's going to be suspended. Because of her zchuyos, we're not going to see immediate results. Much more of that to discuss. And then the Mishnah brought in a lot of ambiguous statements, which we're going to clarify over the upcoming Dapim. And then finally, the Gemara started off with Rebbe Meir in his permanent ink. A lot of discussion in today's daf regarding Rebbe Meir and him using permanent ink. It was controversial. One of his Rebbeim told him, don't do it. Which one of his Rebbeim? Not clear. Either Rebbe Shmuel or Rebbe Akiva. And that took us to the Amud Beis. And then, as we got to the Amud Beis today, the question of recycling a Megillah Sota. Can I recycle it? The answer is no. But there is a sheet of Rav Acha Bar Yoshe that says that you can. And what we did over the course of the Amud Beis is clarify that sheet.